So happy to have you with us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're taking a look at your home today, home improvement, exploring some green residential design, some things that you can do to make your home more energy efficient, perhaps, and more sustainable for our environment. And a couple of guests for you today. Chad Spate's been with us many, many times over the years. He owns Chad's Design Build in Madison. And Chad, great to have you along.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here.
And also with us today, Verge Temme. Verge is, for one thing, she contributed to the book Leading the Way, Domestic Architecture for the Future, LEED Certified, Green, Passive, and Natural. She is a licensed architect and founder of Verge Temme Architecture. And it's great to have you along, Verge. Thank you so much.
It's a real pleasure to be here, Larry.
Well, I'm really happy to have you on to talk about this kind of work and this kind of home improvement, because it's something that I've tried to practice myself over the years. I have an Energy Star home and spent some time and effort and dollars on making it that way. So great to have you all along. And I want to give listeners a chance to join in. If you have a question or comment, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And this, Virgil, I want to go to you first just for a minute, because this LEED, leading the way, and LEED is spelled L-E-E-D. What does it mean to be LEED certified and so forth?
Well, LEED is a program that was developed by the United States Green Building Council, USGBC, in the early 1990s. LEED means Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. And it's a set of guidelines that help architects, builders, homeowners, building owners decide how to make best choices to have the most energy efficient and sustainable buildings. It encompasses not just the building itself, but the various elements within the building, and also the site, where it's located, how the site is handled, how water is handled, energy, the materials that are used. And so it's a program that's been adopted by many countries throughout the world. It's considered one of the leading protocols for designing environmentally sustainable homes. And what a lot of people don't realize is that it actually saves the building owners a considerable amount of money. So it's really a good format to follow.
Well, and, for a while I wondered, well, how does that differ from Energy Star, if I have an Energy Star home? And I guess an Energy Star home would fit a lot of the criteria that we're talking about in a LEED home, except things like location or how you position the home. I didn't have any choice in that when I bought the home, and then I made it an Energy Star home.
Right. Well, actually, Energy Star is part of the LEED program.
Okay, so you need to be an Energy Star home. You might need to have one in order to be part of the program.
That's correct. Yeah, you have to follow certain criteria, certain requirements for the Energy Star. I think it's the version 4. Is that correct,
mm-hmm.
Chad?
Yes.
An Energy Star program in order to be a LEED home.
Well, and I enjoyed your book, Leading the Way. Some wonderful examples and great photography and some good writing. You you have some nice chapters in here of your own. To give people, I guess if I was, for me it gives me ideas.
Right, and that's the whole purpose of the book. There's actually 30 architects and builders' work represented in the book. And what I really like about it is that it gives a nice sampling of a lot of different styles of homes.
Yeah.
A lot of budgets are also included in that. Everywhere from, there's one home in there that is a super low budget home that's really quite beautiful and very energy efficient, all the way up to a home that was over $400 a square foot to build.
Boom!
Yeah.
$400 a square foot.
Right. But, it gives people ideas, whether you have a traditional home, in the book, there are a number of very modern homes, but there are a lot of very traditional looking homes. There mm-hmm. are even some very rustic homes, and all sizes from really quite small to over 4,000 or 5,000 square feet. So homeowners can glean a lot of good information about what to think about, the materials to use, you know, how to approach building a green, low energy, environmentally sustainable home.
We have callers online. By the way, let me let you know that you can join in with your own questions or comments as we talk about residential design and energy efficiency with our two guests, Virge Tammy and Chad Spaeth. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or if you want to post a photo and or question, do it on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the page. Sometimes, if you can shoot a photo of a problem area and we can see it, it's sometimes a little easier to help make a decision and answer a question. So use the Facebook page if you'd like. We have Dave in Milwaukee with a question. So let's go there first. Dave, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Larry. Great show, as always.
Thank you.
Remodeling or redoing a mid-60s ranch home currently has the foam-back vinyl insulation siding. And considering going to stucco, which would mean quite a bit of work there, but thinking that might be a good solution for a vapor barrier and protection from outside, how do your guests look at that? Is that cost-effective, worth a try?
So you'd be taking off the current siding?
Correct, yeah.
So there are a number of things you could be talking about when you talk about putting stucco up. I mean, one approach, which is often referred to as EFIS, is essentially a system of foam boards, foam insulation, that is covered over with a skim coat of a cement-based stucco.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And those building systems are somewhat notorious for the problems that they created back 20 years ago or so, because the flashing details were not properly dealt with by the builders. It can be properly done, and it is one way to add a substantial amount of continuous foam onto the exterior of a structure. And if you have the proper waterproofing and you do all the proper flashing, then something like that might be a way for you to considerably improve the overall thermal performance of the home. If you were simply putting, you know, taking down the siding and then doing something directly in its place that is some sort of a stucco, that would not really provide you with any additional insulation value. So, you know, when you say stucco, what do you know exactly what you mean by that?
Well, I'm going to try looking at contractors or going to home shows and doing some homework on that. But I've seen older homes that have protrudes out, you know, a number of inches, so it would be fairly thick material that would go on there. But yeah, the flashing and all the points of entry would need to be covered up well and double-checked and all that, so that that doesn't create moisture inside.
Yeah,
there are a lot of concerns that you'll have and that your builder should have, and I would definitely say that if you're looking to do something like that, that'll be a great example of where a lower cost builder probably will be avoiding some very important details that you might regret, you know, 5-10 years down the line, because those sorts of systems can be very problematic.
Yeah.
So.
And
but
you
Dave,
you mentioned Dave. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Virge.
Well, what I was going to say is if you're trying to attain the stucco appearance, what you can do, and I agree with Chad that, you know, the most important thing you want to look at is augmenting the insulation, you know, rigid foam insulation to the exterior of the house. But then you can put stucco panels over that, and you can achieve the stucco look at a fraction of the cost of real stucco.
Oh.
The other source I'm going to try is the Midwest Renewable Energy in Stevens Point.
And if you're not, we've got a remodeling expo, as a matter of fact, coming up. And I don't know if that's if Chad, if that's going to there'd be anybody there to address that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, there will be dozens of contractors and suppliers and various building professionals at that conference in Madison. That's coming up next weekend, January 22nd through the 24th. And to get more information on that, you would go to www.nariexpo.com.
And we have a link on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show.
Nari is good.
All right. Very good. Thanks a lot, Dave, for calling. Appreciate your call. Boy, we have open lines to get you on pretty quickly. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Tina in Wautoma called in, couldn't hang on the line, but wanted to ask about she has an old farmhouse, and all right, you know how old farmhouses are. They leak, and they're, you know, water issues sometimes. So what about insulating and waterproofing an old farmhouse? What are the kinds of things that you need to think about?
Well, the very first thing that I would recommend is having a home energy audit. Before you do anything else, you know, anytime you have an existing building that you want to improve the energy efficiency of, contact Wisconsin Focus on Energy, find out who can do an energy audit for you and have that done first. And what they'll do is they'll identify where you have gaps in your insulation, where you might have leaks in your home. They will most likely run a blower door test, which will also, you know, give you a quantifiable number that'll tell you how leaky your house is. And the reason you want to do this is, you know, not only to identify where these leaks are and where you need additional information, but you might also then be eligible for rebates, government rebates and assistance in repairing those leaks, getting better windows in, additional insulation in. But getting back to her question, as far as additional insulation, you can put insulation from the outside, add it to the outside, rigid insulation. You can take the drywall off, which is a lot more expensive. Take the drywall off and put additional insulation to the inside. You can thicken the walls, put additional insulation. There are a lot of different ways of doing it. And probably the best thing to do before getting into this is simply contact an expert on who knows how to do this sort of thing. You know, you can throw a lot of ideas in, but you know what? You want to make sure that you're not causing more problems than you're solving.
Yeah, and I would add to that the typical way that be it a farmhouse or be it just an older home that maybe doesn't have a well insulated wall cavity. What we typically do is simply dense pack cellulose insulation into those wall cavities. And that doesn't require complete removal of one side of the wall. It just, you have to generally take off one or two rows of siding on each level, and then holes are drilled and the insulation is blown into those cavities. And that is typically the most cost-effective way to approach that problem. But then you have other things you have to think about, because an old home, and often an old farmhouse, was built in a way that it was leaky, and it would get wet, and then it would dry out. And so when you dense pack a home that consistently gets wet but then is able to dry out, you are taking away the drying potential of that structure. And so then you might have problems where the water is now, rather than just being able to, because of all that air that was moving, it would evaporate. Now it's going to stay there, and it's going to cause other problems. So that's why we have to have a systematic approach. And I would agree completely with Verge that if you bring in a specialist, particularly a home performance specialist, they will help you address all of those issues so that you're not fixing one problem and creating another one.
And they come back after you do the work and check.
That's correct.
Right. They do a follow-up set of tests to make sure that everything was done properly.
Which is wonderful.
Yeah, and the coolest tool that they use that I don't think you mentioned is the infrared camera, which you know, they have that blower door going and they go around and essentially they can see every hole in your walls. They can see where there are pockets of either heat or cold in the structure. And it's really fascinating.
It's eye-opening.
It is.
I can tell you that for free.
And a lot of people assume that it's exterior walls where a lot of heat loss occurs. But what actually happens in many homes, including newer homes that are not well air-sealed, is that every penetration from the attic where wiring comes down into an interior wall, and particularly where plumbing pipes come down, if that's not sealed well, you have all of this cold or hot air that's coming into that interior partition and causing comfort problems throughout the year. And the infrared camera will show that to us, and it is eye-opening.
It is indeed.
It certainly is.
Talking about your home today and making it, improving it in a number of ways, including energy-wise with our two guests, Virge Tammy of Virge Tammy Architecture and Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build. I'm Larry Mueller. Brianne Chasseau, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 1 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn will be talking to an expert about what people are doing with their gas windfall, which is the money they're saving because of lower gasoline prices. That's at 1 o'clock today on the Ideas Network. Maybe you're spending your gas windfall on some home energy audits and some home remodeling. And if you are, you've come to the right place here because Virge Tebbe and Chad Spade are with us to talk about how you might do that better, even, maybe. Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Well, just lost somebody. Let's go to Lori in Green Bay. Hi, Lori. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I just closed on a house like a half hour ago, and when I got the inspection done on this house, the inspector couldn't get into the attic to check the insulation up there. Is there a way to access that, some easy way to get up there and find out what it has or what it energy auditor be able to tell me how
well,
to do that?
Probably. I don't know if there'll be an easy way to get up there, but there are different ways that one could probably see the attic. I want to ask the question, what type of a roof line does the house have? I mean, do you know that it actually has an attic, or does it have a flatter styled roof?
Actually, it's like an old farmhouse, so bedrooms are up there. There's a bathroom, so
there should be a scuttle.
Yeah. So if there isn't a scuttle, and I guess the inspector probably would have found it if there was one. Though sometimes they just didn't look in that one particular spot. You've got two options. Typical options. One would be to put in a scuttle so that you can get up into the attic in the.
If I can interrupt, the scuttle is an opening. It's an actual opening, rectangular opening, so you can go up into the attic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Some
correct.
People don't know what that means.
Right, but some houses don't actually, for whatever reason, have that. Someone may have covered it over.
Yeah, and sometimes on old farmhouses, they're on the outside, too.
Yes, and absolutely. And so that's what I was going to say. If your second option would be to go up to the gable and go through the wall that is above the ceiling line of the home. And it could be that you have that now, but a lot of times it'll get covered over in a re-siding job or something, and so you'll have to make a new opening into that space.
Possible there's even a window up there.
So oh, that's true.
Could be.
There often is on those old farmhouses. So.
Oh, okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And it would not hurt at all to get an energy audit. You know, and we're talking here, $300 to $500, somewhere in that range, depending on where you are. And if you go to the Focus on Energy program, you can find certified folks who do those things in your area. If you put your area in, you're going to get a list of people who are certified to do that sort of thing. And so I... I think it's a wonderful program.
Yeah, a lot of times when people get a home inspection for a property sale, those home inspectors are looking primarily at wear and tear on the home. You know, they're looking at what's the condition of the furnace, how strong is the water flow. And it's an important service, but very few of those home inspectors are actually looking at the issues that relate to comfort and efficiency. And so that's just an entirely different type of inspection with very different priorities, and they're both important. But.
Lori, thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. I want to turn to another Lori in Portage. Hi, Lori.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I was wondering what you know about ICF, insulated concrete form construction, and is the money worth it for building like that?
And so as for a house, now you're talking?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So we're having some problems with your phone or getting clear signal, Lori, so I probably won't hear from you again here, but let's have our experts. Virge, do you want to start?
Sure. Insulated concrete forms are known as ICFs, and the cost of them ends up being about the same as you would pay for a regular concrete wall, concrete foundation wall, with additional insulation added. Some people like ICFs because there's insulation on the interior and the exterior of the wall, and then concrete is poured into the openings between, you know, this mold of mm-hmm. insulation. In many cases, the homeowner can even be part of that. They're very lightweight blocks that you can set into place. Some of them are big panels set into place. The nice thing about them is they already do have the insulation on them. There are some companies that suggest that the R value is anywhere from 30 to 50, but you really have to be careful on that and really get the nuts and bolts of what they're saying. It's a nice system.
Yeah, I mean you're going to give up a little bit of the strength of what would otherwise be an 8-inch thick cement wall in a typical residential structure, and you're going to have closer to 4 inches of concrete in there, 5 inches. And then the one detail that you've got to worry about no matter what type of wall you put in is the waterproofing of that wall. That's very important, and for a foundation below grade, proper waterproofing of the exterior of that prior to backfilling it. Just
very important.
Very important.
There we go. Thanks, Larry, for calling. Ted and Toma, your turn. Hi, Ted.
Hi, how you doing today?
Great. Appreciate the call.
I have a question. It's not really about remodeling, but I'm thinking it's construction-related. Maybe you guys can kind of help me out here. I have a ranch home built in the late 70s on a poured foundation. And I've heard several people talking about this lately, and it's happened to me, and it's really cold weather. In the middle of the night, I'll wake up, but the house is just a bang. Like, I'm sure it's contraction or expansion of materials. It'll do it several times. And it's like, I don't know if anybody else has heard of that, but it's like, what's really going on? And is it causing damage? Or I never can see anything, but boy, it sounds like a boulder came down the hill and ran into the house, you know? It's like, you know what I'm talking about?
Well, there's different things that could have happened. Chad?
Yeah, so I'm familiar with the phenomenon, but it's not. There are some different things that could explain it. So what type of a roof do you have on the home?
It's just a shingled, 312 pitch,
Okay. So do you know, is it a truss construction? Do you know, up in the attic?
Boy, I'm going to say I looked up in there once about 20 years ago. It was a wick home, so it was like a prefab.
It's almost definitely got trusses. So one thing that could be going on that happens with truss, it's a phenomenon called truss lift. And what's going on is that truss is essentially a web of 2x4 and 2x6
right.
nominal lumber. And what happens is... The truss parts that are up at the roof get really cold and they contract, and the truss parts that are down on the ceiling are warmer because they are part of the thermal envelope. They're actually on the warmer side of the attic, which has probably got, you know, 18 inches of cellulose up there. So it's all tied together, but different parts of it are moving and contracting at different rates. And so that can cause distortions and movements. And what will inevitably happen in a home is when something is trying to move and it can't, and then all of a sudden it does, it's like an earthquake or something. You've got all this potential energy there, and it suddenly gets released, and you hear that sound. And so while it may not definitely be related to the truss system, there could be other parts of the house where things are getting really cold, and then all of a sudden it shifts. So that would be the most...
That sounds like a really good option, or I guess answer to that. Mm-hmm. Another answer or another issue came up just the other night where people, I forget what city now or what area, thought there was an earthquake. And actually it was the freezing ground. With a very rapid drop in temperature, there was something going on with the ground and the freezing of the ground that created movement. And people actually ran out of the house. This is here in Wisconsin. I think it's southern Wisconsin.
Huh.
And one other sidelight, the first time I lived on, when I moved into a home on Lake Monona in the winter, I was awakened one night and wondering what was happening, because there was quite a loud crack and the house jiggled, and somebody said, well, that's a pressure crack from the ice being made on the lake. And it can be very loud, and it can move your house.
Wow.
Jiggle your house around a little bit. So those are all options, Ted.
Okay, I know it was something with the weather, but I'm wondering, does it do any damage? It's happened before in other years, and I looked around and I can't see anything.
Yeah, well, so if you don't see evidence of damage, that's good.
That's
more hopeful. You know, what you'll often see in a home, I mean, cracks in the drywall and plaster are indications of movement, and when that movement occurs, sometimes it can be a sudden shifting that might have created a loud sound, and then what you see is that crack. So, these are all things that do occasionally happen. There are different techniques that we use in a home to anticipate that lift and try to make it so that you're less likely to see cracking in the drywall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I don't have any evidence of anything other than it just wakes me up.
Yeah.
So it could be they properly built it to anticipate that movement. The movement is happening. You occasionally hear the sound, but you don't see it because they anticipated it.
Yeah, took care of it.
So earplugs then.
Thanks, Ted. Thanks a lot for calling. Let's turn to Judy in Green Bay next. Hi, Judy.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I hope you can help us try to determine how to identify a properly qualified person to do the kind of repair we're looking at in the spring. We have a patio door that goes out onto a deck, and apparently the deck was improperly connected to the house. And we've gotten water damage not only to the trim on the door, we know the door needs to be replaced, but there's water damage at least in the subflooring of the adjacent room and down on what we think are called the rim joists. We're not sure how extensive it is, but we're questioning whether a person that just installs doors would have the certification or the qualification to do that kind of lumber repair that's going to be involved so it doesn't, you know, continue to...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so I am trying to recall if NARI has a chapter up in the Green Bay area. I know at one time there was a Fox Valley chapter, but I would recommend the various professional associations up there, and also.
But which profession? That's the question.
Well, a general contractor or a. You know, there are companies that specialize in exterior renovation work. You know, they specialize in siding and doors and windows and things like that. And there are particular flashing techniques that the door and window manufacturers specify for installing a window and a door. And we are told whenever I attend seminars or read on this topic, it's often stated that about 5% of all windows and doors are properly installed.
Only 5?
That's what I've it's an often cited statistic. Now, I would have to think that it's getting better because better, newer homes that are having more requirements for air sealing and insulating, it becomes really important for those flashing details to, be good, as we discussed earlier, because things really can't get wet. So, for example, panning at the bottom of the door opening or a window opening prior to installing the unit is a critical detail that is not often done. And it could be that was missing on your home, and it could be contributing to some of these problems. It could also just be the way the deck itself was installed onto the home under this door. And that's often a place where the details are not as they should be. So, the first thing is going to be assessing the problem to determine what's really causing the issue so that then you can fix that. I think it comes down to finding a reputable contractor that will be able to help guide you. I would go to professional associations. I would the Better Business Bureau.
The National Association of Home Remodelers, if there's a chapter there.
Yep, they have a remodeling council, and these are associations that will help guide you to people that have an expertise in things that can address your needs.
Yeah, good luck.
Judy, I have a question for you. Is there a space on your deck? Is there a space between the edge of the deck and the wall behind it?
Well, you mean where it attaches to the house?
Correct.
There is now.
Yeah.
Because we took the board out and cut it down.
Ah, yeah, there should have been to start with, just so there had been a drainage.
It was an amateur that built the deck after the house was built.
I see.
Yeah. And probably didn't know,
what was going on.
Yeah. Soon enough, we saw the damage on the trim of the door and didn't realize how far it had extended until we actually, took the boards out, went down the basement, took the insulation out, and realized that we had water damage on the subflooring and down in the basement.
Okay, probably back.
The one other thing that I would just mention is that while it's 90% likely that exterior flashing details are contributing to your problem, every now and then we find that what's really going on is that when the door or window was put in, it was not properly insulated at all. And what's really happening is moist air in the house is condensing in that space next to the door or window and causing water damage in the structure. I just point that out because sometimes the thing that you think is causing a problem isn't actually the cause.
More to think about. Thanks, idea. Judy, for calling. Appreciate your call. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Give a call or shoot us a note on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Larry in Middleton up next. Hi, Larry. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I have a 40-year-old clapboard ranch. Every spring now for the last 10 or 15 years, on one side of the house, water leaks out between the clapboards when there's been some snow melting. So I don't know what causes this. It's not a lot of water. I don't ever even see it. It comes trickling up in the night when I can't see it, I guess, but I can see the brown stains that have been left there. And so this is on just one side. I have another side that's comparable to this, and I don't see any of this.
What direction does the offending side face? Is it
north?
Yes. North. Okay.
I wonder if it's not snow blowing in up around the soffit area and wicking its way down.
Well, I mean, so it could be something like that. I mean, it could be that there's condensation forming under the siding on the outside of the house. I mean, and that that condensation, you know, is then different times of day, you know, it will start to drip through the siding. That's another possibility.
What kind of an overhang do you have on the roof?
It's very generous. I don't know exactly, but it's at least 18 inches.
You know, it's not uncommon to see, just like when we see, like, the, you know, dew on the ground or whatever, when the house reaches a dew point, you're going to get different times of year, condensation will form. And so if there's air moving behind that siding, as it should, and if it's properly flashed, it's not a problem necessarily. It can be unsightly. If it's brown, I don't know if that could necessarily be rust. It could be that the water is condensing on the nails that are behind the wall system, and that that could be part of that. Mm-hmm. You know, one way to figure out, of course, is to take apart a portion of the siding on the exterior and see what it looks like. If everything seems to be sound and as it should, then you can put it back together and not worry about it.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, I wonder, too, if this isn't a situation where he might want to have some thermal imaging done to see if the wall is losing heat through it, which is causing the condensation. And maybe that's something that you'd want to do, again, have an energy audit done and specifically have them look at the walls where you're experiencing this.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point. And that actually leads me to the question, is there a bathroom in the vicinity of this?
Yes.
Wall? Okay.
There's a bathroom with two fans, two exhaust fans that are above the slope of where this is occurring.
And those fans are vented through the roof?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, well, so that could be a part of what's going on. It could be that why do you have two fans in the bathroom?
I don't know. They were there
when you got the house.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that an energy auditor will often do is test the airflow in those fans to see how much air they're moving. And if the fans are not doing their job, then a lot of moisture is probably driving through those walls. And that could be explaining what's going on the exterior.
We had somebody come out and look, and they checked that.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
The exhaust is probably not a problem.
Okay.
Interesting for sure. I hope. I wish you good luck, Larry. Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. Taking a look at home improvement today and exploring some green things that we can do with our home and as we remodel the home with our two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Virg Temme, licensed architect and the founder of Virg Temme Architecture. And go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you'll find links to their websites. I am Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for staying with us here on the Ideas Network as we take a look at home remodeling and repair and green design with our two guests, Chad Spade and Virg Temme. And join in. We have one open line at 800-642-1234. Give a call. Barbara in Waupaca, it is your turn. Thanks for calling.
Hello. This is an interesting program. And I live in Waupaca, and I have a friend who lives in a sustainable house that she built about 20 years ago, I think. And she just finished building another one. She has quite a big plot of land to show that it could be done, can be done economically. And she plans to have a couple more houses built out there so that there'll be this whole little neighborhood of sustainable homes. And her house is up on the greenhomesforsale.com site if anybody wants to see it. But she has the homes planned so that they're lovely to live in, you know, for anyone, but they also will accommodate wheelchairs and things like that. So it can be done economically, and I don't know all of the sustainable elements she has. I do know that they share some solar. There are solar elements built into the homes. The overhang, the toilets are low energy, low water. The showers are all, you know, can get a wheelchair in, and but it can be done. And I think there is quite a group of people out, you know, in Wisconsin looking to do this kind of thing, and there are examples here and there to see some good planning for sustainable housing.
Mm-hmm. And Virg, that's something that's near and dear to your heart.
Well, absolutely. And she's so right. And I certainly applaud her friend for doing this. We need many, many more developers doing this sort of thing. And one thing that I'll suggest is as homeowners, developers, builders are looking into doing more sustainable and energy efficient homes, some of the resources they might turn to are the Passive House Alliance. Passive House is actually it's a program that was developed in Germany and has been brought over to the United States. And it's a method of designing a building so that it is 80 to 90% more energy efficient than is required by code here in the United States or here in Wisconsin. And so that's one source, and I think we've got their link up on the website. Also the United States Green Building Council for LEED. But some things to keep in mind is just as your friend has mentioned, she's incorporating aging in place, accessibility within the home. If you can use a building for many, many years, you know, that's certainly better than building a home and then a few years later realizing that it doesn't fit you any longer and having to rebuild and rebuild and rebuild. So, you know, I certainly commend her for doing that. Do you have anything to add?
Well, something that Virg and I were talking about before the show that I wanted to add is that, you know, we often don't think about what it costs to live in a home when we're thinking about what it costs to build or remodel. And every homeowner is going to have to pay to heat and cool that home.
Yeah.
And so if you can cut your energy bill by 70%, let's say, you know, what is that cost? What is that value? So if you're knocking off, let's say you're knocking $100 off of your utility bill, chances are you're not going to be adding $100 to the mortgage a month to have created those savings. And when people look at this objectively, we often find that the real deep energy investments when you're building a home more than pay for themselves in reduced costs to heat and cool that home.
Absolutely right. You know, when you build an energy efficient home, it shouldn't cost you more than 2 to 5% more of construction costs to put in the additional insulation, the better windows that are required. And I was telling Chad before the program that we've run numbers on a couple of the homes that I've done. We've done some in-depth energy studies on these two particular homes. They were both LEED Platinum homes, and what we learned very quickly is that from the moment the people moved into the home, they were saving, you know, between their mortgage and their energy costs, they were saving over $70 a month. So it was actually paying themselves to do a better job of building these homes.
Yeah.
And the thing that, you know, we don't necessarily think about, or we don't often think about it, is that what we really want in a home is comfort.
Exactly. Yeah.
And, you know, we talk about efficiency and we talk about saving money, but if you're not comfortable in your home, I mean, how do you quantify that?
Right. And if you've taken care of all the leaks, if you've insulated it well, then you're going to be so much more comfortable because you're not going to have that temperature differential between, you know, the corner and the middle of the room or the floors and the walls.
Right.
Yeah. There's so many. Barbara, I hope this helps. And thank you so much for your comments today. Appreciate it very much. And good for your friend. Good for your friend.
Absolutely.
Mary in Sun Prairie has a question. Mary, hi. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
About a year and a half or 2 years ago, I had my family room remodeled, and they put new insulation in and new board up and everything. And so I'd say about 6 months ago, I thought that there was like dirt on just a part of the wall, and a friend came over and said that they thought it could be mold or mildew. So I'm wondering what I should do. Perhaps it wasn't insulated properly, or should I call somebody? Or
yeah, well, it's a good question. You might want to think about contacting a reputable contractor to come over and look at what's going on to try to develop some options for explaining it. You know, one of the things, it's so hard to tell sometimes. I mean, so it could be that the most common type of insulation that is used in construction throughout the United States is fiberglass bat insulation. And if this material is perfectly installed, then it can do a reasonable job of insulating. But unfortunately, often it's not perfectly installed. And so a lot of air can move around in that wall, and that might be what's going on if that's the material that was used. There could be so many possible explanations. You know, when the wall was remodeled, something might have happened to the exterior rain plane, and now there's a leak that's causing some water moisture to get into that cavity, and that might be explaining what's going on. Without looking at it, it's hard to say, but I would say having a professional have a look might be the best approach.
It certainly sounds like it's worth the, I mean, if it's mold, you want to have it taken care of if it really is.
Correct. And mold will happen, you know, in any home. All you need is oxygen, moisture, and some sort of wood fiber, and you'll have mold. So.
And Matt and Viola had emailed us, and you know, he built an energy-efficient home with a 12-inch cellulose-filled wall or walls, and even with an air exchanger, he still gets moisture on the windows in the winter, and we're just wondering how to fix this. Should he upsize the air exchanger? He also has large fans in the bathroom and kitchen that are used when they're producing moisture.
Yeah, so, you know, it is true that when we make a really tight home that's well air sealed and well insulated, the common complaint is that it's wet, it's humid, and so we have to put in systems to control that moisture now that we've retained all of it, because an old leaky house dries out. And that's why the older homes, we often have a humidifier on the furnace, because we're adding moisture because the house gets so dry because it's leaky. So when you have a tight home, you don't lose the moisture. The most challenging thing to fix is that if that moisture is rising up through the floor of the basement or the foundation, that's going to be the really tough thing to fix. The obvious things would be if he has a lot of pets and houseplants, you know, those could be contributing to the moisture. It is important always to have good ventilation at the source. So at a stove or in the shower, there needs to be a really good fan, and he might want to test those to make sure they're working properly.
You might also want to get a portable humidistat and take it around to the different rooms and see which room has more humidity in it than another. You know, Chad's suggestion of looking at the basement, put the humidistat down there, and, you know, you should be between, 30% and 50% at the most. And if you're over that, then maybe it's a matter of calling your HVAC contractor in and have him balance your air exchanger, make sure that you've got the right intake and output in each room.
Yeah, a lot of homes with problems like this will end up with a whole house dehumidification system, and that isn't necessarily a part of that air exchanger. So that is a way to go, and those are a high efficiency, high volume dehumidifier that will take care of the whole house. That might be something that will help you.
All right, Brock in Madison, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
My daughter bought a house this summer, south side of Madison, built in 1938, so it's a fairly old one. The big problem we have right now is, so if you look at the house, there was a second floor bedroom built into the attic space. And this was done by putting in knee walls on either side and then putting in a ceiling above it. So the bedroom walls are basically 4-foot knee walls. Then it's the inside of the underside of the roof itself, which are 2x4s, and then a ceiling that was put in. This is all drywalled on the inside. There is no insulation on the outside of the knee walls. So the room gets hot in summer and cold in winter. And I'd like to make it, I'd like to fix that. So the question is, and it appears as though, so you can get into the attic on either side of the bedroom, into those triangular spaces left by the knee wall, the top of the first floor, and the underside of the roof itself. I cannot get into or even look into the space above the bedroom. It appears as though they tried to make the roof a hot roof because what I can see is there's craft faced fiberglass insulation on all of the underside of the roof where I can see it. And I'm assuming that that continues up to the eave, but when the previous owner re-roofed the house recently, they did put in a ridge vent up there, which seems to me to defeat the purpose of building a hot roof.
Right.
So the question is, can I add insulation to the outside of the knee walls? Because obviously those two triangular attic spaces either side of the bedroom are getting hot and cold. The insulation there is inadequate. And what do I do to worry about moisture moving from the bedroom out? Can I use fiberglass insulation? Should I use rigid foam? Any suggestions?
You know what? We're going to have to ponder that for a bit, Brock, because we need to take a quick look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. But you stay with us, and our experts, Chad Spades and Virge Temme, will have an answer for you in a few minutes. Let's take a look at the news. Thanks for joining us today. We're taking a look at green design and ways to make your existing home or building more energy efficient and environmentally sustainable with Chad Spate, who owns Chad's Design Build in Madison, and Virge Temme, professional residential designer, licensed architect, and founder of Virge Temme Architecture. Chad, thanks again. Appreciate it.
Always great to be here, Larry.
And Virge, welcome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
Well, here we had a... Brock from Madison had a kind of a question on behalf of his daughter who has a 1938 home. What was the, explain that.
Yeah, so it's very common to have a bungalow home with a kind of a half story upstairs, and people will finish those rooms over the years. We often see rooms up there that have been, you know, occupied and finished for 50 years, and often what's going on is that there isn't a good thermal envelope around that space. And he's got 2x4 roof rafters. So, you know, there's not enough space in a 2x4 cavity to properly insulate the living space up there that someone decided they wanted to have. So there are a lot of challenges with a space like that. And what we often do, kind of the lowest cost approach, would be to use dense pack cellulose in the entire area from where the he has the kind of diagonal ceiling that is both the roof and the ceiling. Dense pack that and fill up that top area with cellulose to get the maximum lower cost insulation into the space, and then look at either dense packing or maybe better yet for the R value, foaming with a two-part foam, the roof deck from the top of the knee wall down to the bottom where the roof intersects the floor of the attic. And okay. What that will do is that will seal up that entire cavity, the shell. Mm-hmm. It will allow that knee wall space to continue to be used for storage, but it brings it into the envelope so that then it's actually kind of heated space. And we find that that is what we typically do. The other thing that could happen is if he's got the room to make the cavity of the entire roof system thicker, then he gets more R value. You know, if we have 5 inches of continuous foam, we can meet the energy code in a Wisconsin attic. Mm. But we're going to need 18 to 24 inches of cellulose to get a comparable, thermal resistance. And so air sealing is the thing he's really lacking, and then good insulation.
And another thing we discussed is, you know, depending on what her budget is and the condition of the existing roof, you might consider putting rigid foam insulation on the exterior of the roof and building up the roof, and that way you've got the entire envelope sealed.
Another way to do it. There's an event coming up, Better Buildings, Better Business.
Right.
That does it relate at all to this?
Pretty much everything that we've touched on in this program so far would be covered in that conference, and that's in the Wisconsin Dells from March 2nd through 4th. And there are experts from all over the nation coming into this and giving presentations on moisture within the home, how to insulate properly, how to deal with any of your ceiling around windows and doors and openings, how to address your heating and ventilation needs. So, you know, if you have a day or two, it's certainly well worth the trip to go and take part in a day or two of this conference.
And when is it again? It's
March 2nd through 4th.
2nd through the 4th. Brianne will put that up on our Facebook page, so we'll have a link so people can just click on it and learn more about it.
Right.
It sounds like it's something that would be very useful for a lot of people. And again, thanks to Brock for that question. Maureen in Oshkosh has one for us as well. Maureen, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Hope you can help. So I have a really old farmhouse, probably built in the 1860s, and it's got its foundation is fieldstone, and it's half below grade and half above. And I did the focus on energy thing, and I got the energy audit. And one of my biggest heat losses is where the house sits on the foundation. Now, what they did in this house is they put plaster and lath over the rafters. So there's one, an access issue. You can't kind of easily get at the sill box. But in one part of my basement, I had a contractor friend come over, and we cut back the plaster and lath. And what appears to happen, like, I think the bottom of the stone walls are just solid and thick, but in the top half where it's above grade, there's like an outer field stone wall and then a gap and then an inner kind of brick wall. So even getting at the sill box is difficult. And I had a energy guy come, and he wanted to put cellulose in there, which just seemed like a really bad idea in a basement wall to me. And so, one, even if you could get at it, like maybe poke holes in the brick, what could you put in there that would not sort of mess up, well, it wouldn't mold and get icky with moisture questions?
Yeah, well, that's a problem. That could be a problem. Chad, you want to take a shot at it?
Sure. Well, it's definitely a challenging situation. We occasionally encounter this in the old fieldstone foundations. I mean, you do... The thermal dynamics of any foundation below grade are such that moisture is going to come to the inside of the building. That's just a natural kind of stack effect, and the flow of air and water into a building. It gets sucked in at the bottom and it gets expelled at the top. And so we have to be careful that we're not putting material down in that basement that's going to sop up that moisture. And cellulose, you know, really, once it gets wet, it does have some, like, minimal ability to get moist and dry out. But, I mean, not up against a foundation. That's
so it just seemed like a bad idea. And I was like, no, I don't want to do this.
Yeah. So, I mean, foam products really become enclosed cell foam products really become the product of choice down in the basement. And while we always have concerns with off-gassing and things like that, it is a product that is going to tolerate being wet. It also will create a moisture or vapor barrier. And it will provide maximum R value and air sealing. So it gives you kind of everything you need down at that level. But then, you know, as far as the foundation goes, general practice is that we waterproof on the exterior of a foundation, and then we often insulate to the interior. But that would, you know, certainly using the foam, I mean, would be an approach that would maybe solve most of your problems and certainly make the house more comfortable.
There you go.
Something you also might want to check is make sure that you've got positive slope away from the house. You know, so if you have any, I mean, check your gutters, check your downspouts, make sure that your water is being routed away from the house to start with. But then also all the soil that's around the edge of your house, make sure that that slopes away from the house, and that'll help divert a lot of water away.
I don't have a lot of moisture problems. I had it seems to have a really good tile drain system around its foundation.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm.
Good.
That used to come in and go out to the sanitary sewer, and with code changes, it got fixed, and now it goes out to the storm sewer. So I don't have a lot of moisture problems down there. I mean, it's a little dampish, and there's a little efflorescence in spring when the water table rises because I'm 9 blocks from Lake Winnebago. But, I mean, it doesn't really have big water issues at all.
You're very lucky.
Yeah, very, very lucky. Thanks. I hope this helps, Maureen. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Again, you can join in. We have open lines get you on pretty fast at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And speaking of emails, Kelly emailed. She has a very old home with a stone exterior, so this kind of goes along with some of what we've been talking about. Many cracks and missing grout. What can she do to fill those areas? And that's a... With those older stone, and you got to be careful what you do there.
Absolutely. There are different types of mortar, and I defer to my mason to do these sorts of repairs, but I do know that an experienced, qualified mason is only going to use a material that is appropriate for a given structure or wall system. And so... I'm not going to, my recollection is that it's a type E, but I don't want to, I think
right.
That's what we use when with this type of foundation or veneer, but you just want to make sure that you're talking to someone who is going to give you that appropriate advice, and it's definitely something that I would not recommend for a do-it-yourselfer, but,
no.
You know.
No, for sure, And you do probably almost 99.99% sure you're not going to use the most modern, up-to-date, high-tech grout that's out there because it just is not going to fit with the stone that you're
at. Correct.
Almost for sure.
Correct, yeah.
We have Jim in Waukesha up with a question for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. Great program today.
Thank you.
My question is this, correctly insulating below grade in a basement. I have a ranch home that I am in the process of putting a recreational room in the basement. So having friends in the trades and doing the internet searches, looking for an appropriate answer. So I have a two-part question. The first one is this. You had mentioned in the program what proper insulation to use. Again, I'm trying to be as cost-effective as possible. And two, what would you recommend for appropriately building the wall, that moisture barrier? I've seen so many different techniques, putting a moisture barrier against the block or the wall. Should there be an air gap? So a couple quick questions concerning that. So what's your take on that?
Well, there's no one right way to do it. There are a number of systems, but whatever you do, you have to take certain things into account. One is, you know, we talked about how the moisture wants to come into the space. And so that's why down below grade, you will not be installing a vapor barrier behind the drywall on your wall system or whatever you put up for the walls. You absolutely do not want to put the vapor barrier there because you'll trap moisture in the wall. And it will then start to degrade the materials that are behind that vapor barrier.
Sure.
The most cost-effective way, we talked about how foam is the one insulation. Generally, we use like the blue board or the pink board foam that is readily available at a lumberyard or home improvement center. Like those sheet foam products, which are closed-cell foam, can be installed right up to the wall.
Okay.
And if you use those in your wall system, or if you use a two-part spray-on foam, which is a similar material chemically, it sticks on to whatever it's applied to. Those will give you a good material that is not going to be adversely affected by the moisture that drives into that space. And then you have many options for framing the wall on the inside of that foam layer. You know, I would recommend a continuous foam layer up against the foundation wall, and then you can frame it. You know, sometimes you can attach through the foam so that you have essentially strapping on the wall. You can frame a traditional 2x4 wall on the inside there.
Okay.
You're going to need room to chase your wiring for proper outlets and things like that.
Okay.
The other thing you need to be concerned about is the potential for water infiltration. And so there are a number of things that we recommend there. If you don't have a continuous drain tile under the floor with a sump pump, then there are other things you can do so that when you get a minor water infiltration, the water will essentially go to the floor, stay underneath your finished space, and end up in a floor drain. And I would say that I'll put in another shameless plug for the NARI Expo. We're actually going to be doing a seminar next weekend on this very topic of how to kind of deal with moisture in basements.
Oh.
But there will be dozens of seminars on a variety of topics, different approaches, and, of course, dozens of contractors who you can meet if you come to the event. It's at the Middleton Marriott out on the west side of Madison, January 22nd through the 24th. And so hopefully those have helped answer your questions.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim.
Yes, thanks for your time.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see. Let's turn to Denise and Lamira next. Hi, Denise.
Hello. I'm pulling over. We have an early 1800s house, and we have put hydronic heat in it. And we're having a really bad moisture problems on the windows the colder it gets. And my husband has wanted to put in some type of whole house air system, but not sure. We can't really because there's no heating ducts. It's, you know, it was baseboard heat to begin with, and now it's indoor heat.
Yeah.
Any suggestions?
Well, you can do it.
Yes.
Get your checkbook out.
Right.
Get your checkbook out.
Yeah, exactly. Because he's a pretty good do-it-yourselfer, so.
Yeah.
I don't think this is necessarily something that you'd want to tackle by yourself. You know, there are new systems that you can retrofit into existing buildings that have a low-diameter, high-velocity tube that your air can flow through for heat exchange and for dehumidification. That's something you might want to talk to an HVAC contractor for, because you're going to have your house measured and sized right for that type of system. Mm-hmm. But there are systems that you can actually fit into the cavities of the walls and your existing attics, and I would look into that.
I mean,
suggestions on companies or...
Well, most HVAC contractors will be able to help you with that. Just ask them for, what is it, small diameter, high velocity air exchange systems?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing, and I'm not sure what your situation is here as far as what might be contributing to that moisture. I mean, it is true that condensation on windows is almost inevitable when we drop down to, you know, single digits and lower. But certainly controlling that humidity at the source and figuring out...
Well, we have a dehumidifier in the basement and one in our second floor, and they don't seem to be helping.
Okay. So you might want to look at a whole house dehumidification system is another similar approach. It's a slightly different take. You know, when you look at whole house dehumidification, you are generally bringing fresh air into the home, so it does have an element of a fresh air intake, and it often just integrates with the existing exhaust system in the home. And, of course, you want to make sure those point exhausts are operating properly. There are some better, they're not terribly expensive, but they are more expensive than your run-of-the-mill bathroom fan. But there's some good, often made by Panasonic, high-efficiency fans that can be run continuously. And a lot of times people can just run a high-quality bathroom fan in the top floor of a home continuously and achieve considerable improvement in some of these moisture and particularly fresh air exchange issues. But
you know, sometimes, too, on older houses, they have the flexible ducts in bathroom and primarily in the bathroom fans. And sometimes those get kinked. Sometimes mm-hmm. they get filled up with debris.
Right.
And so that's something you might want to check, too.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, birds love to build nests in the open vent flaps. Yeah, it's a very welcoming environment.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Yeah, I can remember the previous home that I owned, the neighbor's home. I would watch the sparrows, who got very good at kicking up those little vents in the home next door, and then and they had their nests in there.
Or bees.
Bees sometimes.
Bees love that.
and it turns into quite a bit of a mess, and probably a fire hazard and everything else. Oh, my gosh. We had Sharon in Middleton called with a tip for Maureen in Oshkosh, who had with the old Fieldstone home. So the Wisconsin Historical Society has architects associated with the Historical Society, and she suggested that perhaps...
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's great advice.
They contact them because they will certainly have some a great deal of information. Dave in Shorewood has a 1924 home with a double-hung windows with sash cords. Short of replacing the windows, how does he limit infiltration?
Well, you know, so there are different types of gaskets and things that can be installed to utilize when you're opening and closing. And then, of course, we're all familiar with the old-fashioned plastic that you stick on to the entire perimeter of the trim, mm-hmm. and you pull out the hair dryer or the heat gun, and it shrinks and gives you a really good air seal from casing to casing, and that actually
it works.
It's a great, you know, it's a great approach if you know to keep the old windows. There are different things that can be put into the little pulley opening where the weight rope is running to help seal that better. There are a variety of things that can be done.
Well, here we are pretty much out of time. Virgin and Chad, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. And Virg, your book, Leading the Way, Domestic Architecture for the Future, LEED Certified Green Passive and Natural. We've got a link on our Facebook page to that. I hope the book's been selling well.
I really have no idea, but I hope so, too.
Of course you... Obviously you would. And Chad, business has been good and...
Been great, yep. A lot of things happening. A lot of people are fixing up their homes and making them more comfortable, and so... Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. We have on our Facebook page, at the Larry Mueller Show, that's the title of our page, we have links to Verge's business and also links to Chad's as well, so I hope you'll go online. And then don't forget about the Better Buildings, Better Business meetings that are coming up first part of March. And also next weekend, the Remodeling Expo in Madison. Thanks to them, and thank you all for listening. It's already Friday tomorrow. We're going to talk about gardening, of course, the right size. Flower garden will be the discussion with a gardening expert and get some tips on design and plant choices. Thank you so much for listening, and please do stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.